Welcome back to the program. Amidst all the political talk about immigration, we forget the most important part, that throughout the history of every nation, it's been the way cultures renew themselves, the way in which the vibrancy of cultures stay relevant, the way in which we connect and understand each other, and perhaps most importantly, the way we often get great food. This has been something that our guest Eddie Wong has done all of in his career. He's a recovering lawyer, he's the son of immigrant parents, and a fantastically successful chef and proprietor of the Bauhaus restaurant in New York's West Village. He's just been named a TED Fellow for 2013, and his memoir is garnering lots of attention. It's entitled Fresh Off the Boat, and it is my pleasure to welcome Eddie Wong to the program today. Eddie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You grew up in a place that would seem to belie so many of the things that you have since done, and that is in the boring suburbs of Orlando, Florida. Talk about that.
Yes. You know, a lot of the book is about not allowing, you know, nurture to determine who you are, you know, that you have a say in these things. And it's a story very much about family and coming of age and finding the things that you love against all odds, so to speak.
When did you realize that suburban life, that boring cul-de-sacs of Orlando, was not something you wanted, that you were looking for something richer than that?
You know what? I realized it very, very early on, maybe even a few months into Orlando, was because I kind of wasn't even allowed to participate in that suburban culture. Everywhere I went, the first year I was in Orlando, it was pretty rough, you know? I went to a Christian school, and the first thing they did was they told me, you know, you write with your left hand, you should write with your right hand, you know? When I asked about Adam and Eve, why they were white and I was yellow, they fed me soap. I also, when I was waiting after school to play football, a lot of the times my mom would say she would watch me wait on the field in this person's backyard, waiting to play, and it'd go 3 or 4 hours, me just standing there watching. And even though I was enthralled, I thought it was really, really cool to watch people play a sport that I had never played before. I never played football before. And just watching them, I wanted to play it, and I would stay there. But my mom would say that she would cry watching because she saw that the boys, they wouldn't let me play until someone had to go home and they needed me to finish up the game.
You were picked on a lot. You were called names. You were made fun of.
Yeah, I was really not allowed to participate. I was made fun of. I was picked on. I remember even bringing stinky Chinese lunch to school all the time. I loved my mom's food, but I just remember like that smell of sesame oil that would come out of the bag when I opened my lunch. I remember when I brought seaweed for show and tell, the other kids would say, Eddie, eat poop because Charlotte's upon seaweed. And so I was just, nothing I did, nothing my parents gave me was understood. You know, no matter what I did, I was just such an alien to everyone. And I remember I told my mom, I said, Mom, can you just pack me like what these other kids bring to school? And my mom's like, what do people bring to school? And she had no idea. And I went to school. I went to the grocery store with her, and I started pointing things out. I was like, Mom, look, they eat Lunchables. They like Lunchables. They like sandwiches. People eat sandwiches. And I said, you know, there's this microwave thing called Kid Cuisine that I really like, and I see other kids with it. So she gave me the Kid Cuisine, and I remember it was an actually very emotional night going to the grocery store because I was telling my mom all these things she didn't know, and we were kind of neat, but both of us, neither of us really liked the foods that I was telling her to give me, but I just wanted to fit in. I wanted to fit in so badly. And I brought that lunch to school, and me and my mom were happy, and we really thought that, you know what, Eddie won't get picked on during lunch anymore. And I went in line, and I remember this kid pushed me down in the lunch line and said, Chinks, get to the back of the line. And in third grade, I was really young, but it was at that moment I realized, I'm going to be outcast my entire life in this town. You know, people will always pick on me in this town. And I can either take it and roll over, or I can be proud of who I am and stand up and fight back, even though nobody's helping me, whether it's teachers or other students, no one was supporting me. And I stood up and I fought back, and for years I fought back. It was very reactionary. The book is very much about overcoming these challenges and being different.
And in many ways, you could argue that you fought back too hard because it really put you in conflict with the law at various times, and your parents wound up sending you back to Taiwan for a while.
Yes, absolutely. You know, because I was just so upset. in those years, and I had to fight very hard for my dignity and everything. And sometimes I think I took it too far, and sometimes a lot of bad habits became part of my character. And, you know, I got in a lot of trouble, and that's when my parents sent me back to Taiwan. And in Taiwan, I realized being reactionary isn't actually being yourself either. You're still allowing people to dictate your actions based on their actions. And when I was in Taiwan, the most gratifying thing was the first time I got into the airport, and I saw an entire airport full of Taiwanese people. There was Taiwanese, you know, doctors, there's Taiwanese lawyers, there's Taiwanese cab drivers, there's Taiwanese skateboarders. You walk around Taiwan, there's Taiwanese people in mountains, Taiwanese people in lakes, Taiwanese people surfing. And I that's when I realized I can be anything I want. I don't need to be what they think I am, nor do I need to be a reaction to the stereotypes in America. I need to really find who I am. And that summer was the beginning of me finding who I am and trying to kind of push out all those ideas in my head that were put there, you know, by dominant culture and other people and by my own reactive behavior. So it took a lot of soul searching, and it was actually really, really cool to kind of unwind the damage that had been done.
At what point did you start to realize that not only did you need to understand whatever you needed to understand from an educational perspective, but that you really needed to embrace and understand the culture that you had missed out on when you came back to the States, whether it was television shows or whether it was entertainment or whatever it might be, that you had to have a sense of kind of the cultural landscape?
Yeah, one of the biggest lessons you learn is sometimes you have markers like, hey, I like the shows on the WB. Those shows are for me and those shows are for my friends. I don't watch shows on network television. I only watch HBO or whatever. Or this type of music is not for me because the people in the music video are wearing clothes that I don't wear. And it wasn't until I realized that I shouldn't, you know, being an equal member in America isn't about closing things off and identifying yourself with only a few things that you think are made for you. I think really liberating your mind and liberating your identity is about realizing you can like whatever it is that you like. Even if you're Chinese or you're Latino or you're black or you're white, you don't have to like what people think you're supposed to like. You can go after whatever you want. And to have that confidence and to have that courage to say, you know what, I like singing Justin Bieber at karaoke and I don't care what anybody else thinks, I think that's part of it, you know?
When did you start to develop that level of confidence? Because at a certain point you decided you liked a lot of African-American culture. Charles Barkley became a hero to you. Talk a little bit about how you began to embrace that and how confident you felt in doing it.
You know, Charles Barkley was always a huge, huge influence on my life ever since I was a child, you know. Same with Hank Aaron, same with Jackie Robinson. But the time that I really started to come into my own and feel comfortable was in New York when I was part of something that was, you know, in New York you meet a lot of people who they do not fit stereotypes. They do not fit the mold. You try to identify them based on markers or places they've lived or what their parents do or what they do. And New York teaches you really can't judge anybody by anything. And there's just so many weirdos that kind of defy stereotypes and defy stigmas. And being part of New York, living in New York, being a New Yorker now myself, it really was New York that opened my eyes up to all the different combinations and possibilities there are.
It was almost like as a young person, you needed kind of an American culture kit, so something that would come that would give you all the information.
Yeah, no, I really didn't have that as a kid. I remember going to people's houses and seeing, like, the leg lamp, and I was like, why does your dad have a leg lamp? And they're like, dude, you don't watch The Christmas Story? Like, the leg lamp is amazing. And I didn't know what Jimmy Stewart was. I didn't know what Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was or The Sound of Music. And I remember I just felt like such an idiot in class. But, you know, it was actually a gift and a curse. It was so hard growing up. But now I'm much stronger and I'm very happy, you know, because I was able to find the things and cherry-pick the things in America that spoke to me. I didn't feel like there were things that I had to like or had to know, and now I'm just one of those people that soaks up the cultural artifacts that I enjoy, you know?
Talk about the decision to become a lawyer and how that came to be.
Well, after I got in trouble, I had been on felony probation for a while, for about 3 years. I said, you know, I know that people will stigmatize me because of this charge, because of what I've done here, the fight that I got in college, and I wanted to be an attorney and pass the bar so that people could see, you know what, he's an intelligent guy. You know, you don't accidentally pass the bar. You really have to work hard, and you really have to be smart to do it. And I wanted that certificate almost as like a bulletproof vest, so that if people wanted to knock me down a peg or question my intelligence, I would say, you know what, I did this. I dedicated 3 years of my life, and I did this. I also was very interested in constitutional law and criminal law, and I worked at the Innocence Project. I was, you know, one of the students that got picked to work for Barry Scheck there, and it was a great experience. But once I went into big firm law, that culture wasn't me, and I only lasted about 6 months before I got out of there.
All along, you had been interested in food. Talk a little bit about the way that really became a way that you would define yourself.
Well, food was something that you'll see throughout the book is something that I love. Food was always something that I identified with, and it was one of the few cultural artifacts that Asian people, Chinese or Taiwanese people brought to America, and we were respected for. And I felt, I always wanted to be point guard of the Knicks, but no one expected a Chinese, Taiwanese kid until after Jeremy Lin, I guess, to be point guard of the Knicks. And I said, though, the thing that we are expected to be very well, very good at is cooking. And people love pork buns, people love combo number 5, people love Chinese food. And I was always good at cooking Chinese food. So I was doing stand-up comedy after I left the law, because stand-up comedy was always one of those things I wanted to do. And I said, I can't go through life without ever trying. And I tried it. But the manager at the comedy club was like, people really like it when you bring, like, fried rice or dumplings or chicken wings to the show before you go on. And he said, why don't you try to get some appearances on food shows or something? And you could be funny, and who knows what will happen. But you should just get on there and get some exposure. So I applied to Ultimate Recipe Showdown, and out of 14,000 people, they chose my recipe. And it was a competition of, I believe, 5 people. And it was a very eye-opening experience, because I saw, you know, out of all these people that submitted, they chose mine, so I must be good. And even though I didn't win the competition, I was really encouraged, and I realized that I was good at cooking, I wanted to go after it, and that if I cooked well and I had a great restaurant, that maybe people would listen to the things I had to say about my American experience. And it happened. You know, like today they told us this book is now a New York Times bestseller, and who would have believed it? You know, my mom came here when she was 17. My dad came here in his mid-20s after serving his time in the Taiwanese military. I was always in trouble as a kid. No one thought I'd amount to anything, and today we're a bestseller.
One of the things you talk about with respect to food is a kind of power, as you see it, a kind of soft power in the world today.
Cultural soft power is a very important thing in the world today. That's, you know, people have written books called The Clash of Civilizations. People are clashing now over soft power, whether it's TV shows or movies or books or music or food that you're exporting. But food is something that is still very much divided on racial lines. And food just happened to be, you know, life finds you in funny ways. I just meant to be part of this conversation in food right now, because it is very important to know where things are from, to respect the cultures they come from, and to kind of give the context in which you're consuming these cultural goods the proper respect and dignity that they deserve.
It's interesting, the relationship between food and culture. In many ways, if you can understand the food, you can come to understand the culture and the people better.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Food is definitely a gateway into cultures. It's probably the easiest way and the lowest common denominator to experience and consume somebody's culture. The conversation in food that I think we need to get past and build upon is not just does this taste good or it does taste good. It's, you know, like when you look at clothes or you look at fashion, it's not just does it look good. You know, it's part of the style section. It's an art form. Clothes and certain styles belong to certain demographics, belong to certain neighborhoods. It says something about you. It represents you. And food does too. If people understand the history of food and the stigmas involved with certain foods and what it means to certain cultures, I think that they will really, really have a much richer experience eating.
Do you think there's enough appreciation of the cultural ownership of food?
I don't believe so, no. I think that people are very quick to say, oh, I'm going to take these spices from here, I'll take this technique here, and I'll throw it on a hamburger. Lots of people like to do that. I think there's a big difference between co-opting or appropriating food and localizing it. Localizing is very interesting. For instance, Japanese food in Peru, you know. There's also Jamaican Chinese food or Cuban Chinese food. There's also New York Italian, which is amazing. And then there's New York Jewish food. These are localized foods, and they spring out of a community, and it's a community of people, and it serves this palate. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and generations to build that culture of localized food. A lot of chefs, a lot of restaurants like to take shortcuts these days. They do fusion cooking, or they'll do new American cooking. And every year, you know, last year was the year of Rene Redzepi. And Rene Redzepi is amazing. But everybody else that kind of just wants to have dishes influenced by Rene Redzepi and follow a trend, it's very shallow to me. Food trends are very funny because they get recycled so fast. And the way that we recycle, chew up, and spit out these food cultures, I think is... doesn't do it. It does the culture a disservice, and it doesn't give people enough time to let these things sink in, to understand it, to really enjoy it, and then to share it.
What are the things you still want to do with food and future restaurants, perhaps?
Well, I'm actually very interested in localized food, like I just talked about. I want to continue to open Bauhauses, but Bauhaus, the thing is, as much as people know us for the Chairman Bao, the pork bun, I feel like people in New York, at least, really feel like Bauhaus. The story of Bauhaus is about context. It's about, we kind of built a futuristic YMCA. That's what we sought out to do. We sought out to create a youth cultural restaurant. There aren't many restaurants that target youth culture besides fast food. In-N-Out Burger has a great youth culture. They came up with Hot Rodders and Surfers in California, which I really love. But, you know, there's very few restaurants and businesses that are youth-targeted, and that's what we did. And Bauhaus, I want to continue opening them in different neighborhoods, and I want people to know the menu may be different. There's probably going to be 30% different menus in each location, but you can trust and believe that the spirit of the restaurant is the same in every single one. You know, it's going to be youth cultural, it's going to be vibrant, it's going to be creative, and it's going to be very progressive. And that's what I want to do. I want Bauhaus to be a brand that people trust for an honest conversation, honest food, and stimulating context. But I will rotate the menu. I will rotate the foods because I don't want people to hang on to just what's on the plate.
Eddie Wang, his memoir is fresh off the boat. It is just out from Random House. Eddie, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Great questions.